Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. Glad we're able to get this done. I'm actually in the office here, if people see the background. So just as a quick timestamp, this is Friday, February 2nd, and it's a few hours after payrolls came out. So I guess generally, let's start with your take on payrolls and obviously any price action comments. We also had the Fed this week, so a lot to discuss over the past week, and obviously we'll discuss the week ahead.
Cool. So the payroll, from the Fed perspective, what matters is not the number. I mean, for sure the number is huge, but at the same time, it's totally consistent with growth above trend, which has been my view for some time. But what is much more interesting is the pickup in wage growth. And as you know, I've been saying for some time that wage growth was too low relative to unemployment. Real wage growth was too low, and that it reflected some factors, some that were one-off, and but that there would be delayed wage transmission. And it looks like this transmission is finally happening, the transmission of a strong growth to wage growth. So to me, that's the biggest news on the labor market, and basically in the press this week, Powell has been talking a lot about labor market healing, and so it could be that the so-called healing, whatever that meant, could be over. I mean, we also have had several months of flat participation. Labor, the increase in foreign labor, which played a big role in the low wage growth. I mean, we've had several months of flat foreign labor, so there's something there. I don't think it means we have moved to a path of higher inflation. I still think that the bigger driver of inflation is really oil prices, because of their impact on inflation expectations. But it kind of makes sense, that the Fed would basically be on hold, not do anything next month to figure out how this impacts inflation. And by the way, we are also seeing a big increase in productivity. So there is a possibility that this wage growth is like temporary, a sort of catch up. Because real wages until recently were below their level of end 2019, so of before the pandemic. So this could be a catch up, which is partly offset by productivity. We don't know, but it gives more reasons for the Fed to stay on hold.
Do you think on productivity, just a question, this would be completely wrong thinking, but if you have a bunch of, you have a large number of undocumented people entering the country, and then they actually are doing jobs, kind of more menial jobs, but they're not counted in the productivity, but you see their output is counted. So it, could that be an impact in, and I think we've talked about in the past where you say, well, by bringing in these extra workers, that is offsetting some of the demand and taking away some of the stress and having to pay a lot for extra workers, I guess, certainly for more menial tasks. But it could also flatter the I guess the GDP numbers and productivity numbers.
So the productivity numbers, definitely. But I think there is something else at work, which I'm really seeing in daily life, which is during the pandemic, businesses learned to run with less labor. And they've learned a few tricks, if you will, like the restaurant where you can put your order online. Or even the doctor's office, where the nurse has been replaced by someone less skilled. And probably some of those practices are still there, which is what has allowed businesses to accommodate the strong demand we have post-pandemic with fewer workers. So of course, the measurement issue is always there in terms of illegal workers. But I think there could be something else, which is, the economy learning, the business sector learning to cope with less with fewer workers.
Right.
Sorry.
Clearly,
Yeah.
in the tech and big tech, they're trying to do that. They're cutting out middlemen. And then there's also the opportunity that AI is making high performing developers much more productive. So they may need just less generally, less developers as well.
Oh, definitely. And the AI point, after the internet bubble, we saw an increase in productivity, a decline in inflation, and it was more like around 2003. In fact, I was reading a Bernanke speech where he was worrying about low inflation. But I think this time around, the adoption of the new technology is going to be even faster, and it's clear that for coding, for instance, we're already seeing a lot of productivity increase. Now, it's, I'm hand waving here because it's hard to come up with a specific number, but I
Right.
am definitely on the lookout for much faster adoption of productivity enhancing technologies this time around. No question.
Okay. Any other, just make sure we address that, and then we can also address the Fed meeting earlier in the week. So from payrolls, anything else that stand out to you?
To me, the wages was really because you see the 60 basis point increase in wages is coming on the back of two consecutive months of 40 basis point increases. So to me, yeah, it really sounds like strong demand for labor is finally impacting wages, which, by the way, is going to be great for the fortunes of President Biden.
Interesting. And then, okay, so takeaways from the Fed earlier in the week, and Jerome Powell's, I guess,
So the take yeah. So the takeaway from the Fed is that sadly I was once more surprised. I mean, what there are two things that surprised me, and one which I don't think is credible. So there were two reasons for the hawkishness. One, Powell said he was not worried by the risk of inflation falling below the target, or he said he would react. He used the word react twice during the presser, which I don't find very credible because low inflation has been a Fed concern for 20 years. As I said, I was just reading a Bernanke speech on 2003 where he was talking about the danger of low inflation. 2003 is when the Fed started to talk about the risk of inflation, of downside risk of inflation being substantial despite strong growth. So I don't find this very credible on the part of Powell. I think if we saw further increase in risk of sliding back into inflation shortfall, so a further strong decline in core PC, I think the Fed would come in and ease very strongly. I don't think it would wait for inflation to settle, into, I don't know, 1.6, 1.8 range. I don't believe that. And the second thing that was really surprising to me during the presser is that he gave a list of reasons for not cutting in March. But these reasons could have been equally applied to, not pivoting to an easing bias. So these were like very broad, general reasons. So he was worried that core goods deflation would end. He was worried that with the supply shock, the economy was getting a big boost. He didn't know how long it would last. Basically, he was uncomfortable hiking when inflation, when growth was so strong. He mentioned wage growth. Well, it turns out he was right, whether or not he'd seen the data before the the pandemic or not. But some of his reasons were really long-term reasons that could not pin to a specific date. So, why wait for March? You could wait another 6 months to be sure that core goods deflation is not ending, and you still would have good reason of not being sure. So I thought it was a bit confusing, but at least it made a clear case that March was not going to happen. And with today's NFP, definitely not. So we know where we stand short term. Longer term, I think it's going to depend on really inflation, because you have two force types of forces working in opposite direction. You had the positive supply shock. In my view, the energy prices was really the key part there. And then you have the demand shock. I mean, fiscal policy. I mean, you have a 6% budget deficit when unemployment is close to the lowest since the 1960s.
Yeah, it's
And then you have super low household savings. So the two things were pushing in opposite direction, and until recently it was a positive supply shock. But now with this labor market situation, things could have changed. So my next piece of research is definitely an in-depth look at inflation going forward. But I think that's really what's going to drive the Fed.
right. And the stuff, the this bill that was kind of a bipartisan agreed in the House, and I guess is getting sent to the Senate around
Tax cuts.
tax cuts, child support, child care, child support. That seemed like both parties agreed to just let the other party put something in there, and there was no
Well, I mean, it's
Yeah.
crazy. What can I say?
It
I mean,
just,
the party, traditionally the Republicans stood as a party of fiscal restraint, but no more. I mean, if there is one thing they can agree on is to, spend more, give more tax cut, and it's only going to add fuel to the fire. So yeah, it's happening.
seemed incredible. Yeah, it seemed
Totally.
incredible. Okay, cool. I know that those are obviously the very big aspects. What's your general view now on out to June, or you want to see how everything plays out, and
So I need to think through inflation. I think if paradoxically, if we have an oil shock, the Fed is rescued because they'll obviously stop the easing bias, and they'll be able to blame it all on Middle East politics. If we have, a reasonable increase in oil prices, then it's more difficult for them, because the positive supply shock that was keeping down inflation is not there. And then you have these wage increases coming through the labor market. So we'll see. And of course, if our prices fall from here, this might just rescue inflation.
Yeah, great. Okay, and then there is a week ahead coming, so
So week
yeah.
ahead, we have like lots of Fed speakers. And after the NFPs, they have their work cut out for them. So I'm waiting with great expectations to see, what they have to say. We will have the inaugural speech from Governor Kugler. We never heard from her since she was appointed. So I'm very interested in that. Otherwise, data-wise, after this week, it's going to seem very tame. We have the services PMI that always gets a lot of market attention. But if you look at the data, actually, the services PMI post-pandemic has really decoupled from the GDP. But still, then we will have the senior officer survey, the Fed survey on bank credit practices. What had happened in previous survey was that we had seen the number of banks that were tightening credit or that were seeing weaker demand for credit. This number was going down. So in other words, the transmission there was no transmission of Fed easing through a bank or Fed tightening through banks. So this was not a problem while when inflation was falling. But now if inflation stabilizes, it's maybe it will get more focus. I basically expect that the sluice, that's how it's called,
Yeah,
is
sure.
going to show a continuation of those trends. So that would be interesting. And then we have consumer credit, which I think is going to show a pickup. What do we have? Trade balance, jobs
So
claim.
a pickup of consumer credit, is that symptomatic of consumers not being in a great position to spend, or is it viewed as that they have confidence that they have increased future earnings and have leverage in at their jobs?
So more like confidence because consumption has been so strong. You look at confidence, consumer confidence surveys, you know, they are really very, very strong. And also room to borrow because of the strong balance sheets coming into the pandemic. But from the Fed perspective, of course, it's not the best. And basically, the tightening of monetary policy has not been transmitting through the banks. And that's one thing I've been talking about for some time, by the way. The banks' balance sheets are too weak to kind of transmit policy tightening. What I mean is that if the reason banks are still expanding, especially small banks, not large banks, but small bank increasing credit, is that you have the Fed facilities, you have an implicit deposit guarantee. And if you didn't have those things, I think banks would be tighter, household would find it more difficult to get credit. But it's just not happening because
They have
banks
that
need,
comfort or they
yeah,
have that support. Yeah.
it needs that support, and that support prevents the transmission of
And do
monetary
you
tightening.
expect that to change in the next 1 to 2 months?
No, I think
As these
this.
facility, I thought some of these facilities are being brought to an end.
So definitely the bank term funding facility, the Fed has already announced it was closing in March. But you know, the Fed is pushing banks to borrow at the discount window because it wants to remove the stigma. And so you can assume that liquidity on tap is available. And most importantly, you have the FDIC implicit guarantee on every deposit in the US. And you can assume that if there was, you know, renewed tensions in the banking system over the losses linked to commercial real estate, if necessary, the Fed would come up with another facility. So the bottom line is that, you know, we came out of the financial crisis in 2008 with a completely distorted banking system where we had four bank behemoths that had a strong funding advantage over the smaller banks because of the too big to fail, as I were obviously too big to fail. And
Yeah.
so this didn't matter as long as there were no strains in the system. But now that the strains are apparent, with the so first the losses on the bond portfolio, now the losses on the CRE portfolio, the Fed has had to step in to support those smaller banks, the Feds, the FDIC, And that prevents the transmission of monetary tightening.
Understood. Understood. And obviously, generally, I wouldn't touch on it, but like just generally, this issues about commercial real estate exposures, I guess, on some of the kind of small, medium-sized banks. Do you see that? That's the last question. Do you see that playing out?
So I don't see this becoming systemic or having a macro impact simply because CRE is a small share of a bank's loan portfolio, bank's assets. Also, that sector is a fairly small share of the US economy. I mean, non-residential construction is on fire, not because not so much because of CRE. But because of all the subsidies the government is giving to chip manufacturers and in general to clean energy. So for sure, there is a loss of wealth there. CRE assets are less valuable than before the pandemic, in part because we've had the shift to working from home. So that loss of wealth is going to be absorbed, has to be absorbed somewhere, and I think it will be basically absorbed by equity holders over a long period of time. I think the consequence will be maybe we will have a faster migration of banking assets toward larger banks, but a sort of a big
Or to
crisis,
private credit.
which is probably the next bubble that the Fed will have to deal with. But a big macro event, I don't think so.
That's it. Okay, great. And then, as we always like to do, we'll highlight a few pieces from the past week. Actually, one, Bilal had a very interesting podcast with Henry Rochat, who's a long time kind of a very senior guy at banks and very involved in kind of the investment tech and asset management space. Henry taking giving his updated and forward-thinking views on Bank of England, and how labor is really going to be the key for them. Ben continuing a pretty hot run on some great calls on FX, as he was taking profit on the kind of short Aussie CAD.
Yeah,
Some
Ben
other
is on
highlights.
fire.
Ben's had some great calls. A few new trades on spread trades in Europe on the rate side. And I mean, again, Varesh has continued to have some just amazing insights on energy. And for pro clients who haven't spoken to Varesh in the past, I would highly recommend. We were on a call with him yesterday, and I mean, he just really knows his stuff. And I think he has a pretty pushback against consensus kind of view, especially on the questioning of the adherence to the greed cuts. So again, some really great calls. Caroline and Mears also had some great track record recently on some great calls on emerging markets. And so if you're focused on that, those guys are great to talk to, along with Liang, and focus on China. So
And also
I guess.
Sam's NFP model, which predicted, I mean, obviously the model works by picking out the best forecasters. I mean, obviously everybody's forecast for today's NFP was based on the unrevised data, which was weaker than the revised data, which explains, the discrepancy between the sort of surprises people were expecting and the actual surprise that was much larger. But the bottom line is, Sam has a really neat little model and it works.
And it works. And it's been, I know since we've been running, I think we would be basically top two or three.
On the CPI, definitely.
Which has been, rated kind of researcher. So yeah, it's been amazing. I would definitely recommend people, now that we're gone beyond CPI, now going to payrolls and looking to continue to expand the range of underlying kind of data points that we build the model around. So wish everyone best of luck, great weekend, and of course, let's chat anytime on video or on the Bloomberg chat rooms. Thank you very much. Bye.